They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners and admiring fans, to the Magellan's at the Movies podcast. As always, I am Nathan Mogollyines, joined also as always by my brother Elliot Mogollyines. Elliot, let's dive into the banter with the biggest piece of movie news from this week, I would say. James Gunn's Superman has a trailer. The trailer came out today. We've both seen it. Elliot, what are your thoughts? Are you excited for this? Are you back on the superhero train? You've been a bit of a superhero hater on this podcast for the past couple of years. Has this rekindled your love of superheroes?
Well, no, obviously. That was never going to happen. I am more excited about this movie, having now seen the trailer, than I was beforehand. I think that James Gunn, clearly, for whatever drawbacks there are, and there are, to his style, I think that he clearly has a real appreciation for comic books, for their history, and their style, and their idiosyncrasies. So, I think that he is not unsuited to the task of making a comic book universe, so long as he is able to kind of restrain his worst impulses. And this is a trailer, obviously, it's like 2 minutes long. There's not a whole lot that we can definitively say from it, but from this trailer and from what we saw in it, I do think that it seems that he has at least a little bit kind of reined in his impulse towards the tediously edgy or irritatingly overwrought. I have never been the biggest Superman fan. I like the idea of him as a character. I like him for his simplicity and his innocence and his fundamental goodness. And I felt like this trailer was bringing all of that. He seemed like that classic Superman symbol of hope, truth, justice in the American way.
Yeah.
I liked how sincerely cheesy it looked to be, with the giant monsters and the overcrowded roster of superheroes and the bright colors. I liked that. I think that that's, I'm here for that, for some more sincerity in comic book movies, to move past the irritating meta snark of Marvel. So yeah, I think it was a good trailer. It definitely moved the needle a little for me. What do you think?
I would just echo everything you said, especially desiring a shift towards sincerity in the face of meta snark. I think Superman is the classic sincere superhero. I think he's up there with Spider-Man in terms of superheroes whose entire idea is that they are just a little guy helping other little guys, even though Superman is like the most not little guy in terms of powers, but his ethos, the way he interacts with the world, is very much like that. And I agree. I think James Gunn operates best when he's under some constraints. I did not love the his version of the Suicide Squad. I thought it was okay, but I thought it was also needless. I mean, I'm not a huge Suicide Squad guy, so I think it was very in keeping with the comics, which I don't care for, in that it was very, you know, dark and edgy and grimy and gross and, you know, not necessarily a very fun sort of experience. So I think him with some more constraints is good. I think I've said this on the podcast, that I think James Gunn is an interesting person to build your cinematic universe around. I feel like the mistake that DC keeps making is putting directors in charge of that as opposed to a producer, because Kevin Feige is clearly the head of Marvel, and I don't think anyone can argue that he did a bad job in bringing his universe to life, and that DC keeps giving it to, you know, directors, people who are good at making one movie at a time. So I don't know. This trailer did get me a little more excited for the next stage of the DC universe, and I think DC is already, I'd say in the last 5 years, DC has made more, well, actually, never mind. They've made one really good movie that I like, and they've made a lot of other movies. But Marvel hasn't made any movies that I've really liked in the last 5 years, so DC's one up on them in that sense.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, but a few weeks ago, also, I apologize if anyone's hearing, like, echoey talking. That's my neighbors downstairs. But yeah, a few weeks ago, or maybe it was actually a few months ago, Hideo Kojima and Quentin Tarantino both came out in support of Joker 2.
Oh,
and I was
great.
Like, that is just perfect. that two of my least favorite creators have said, like, oh no, this movie's actually really good. And I've never subscribed to the idea, to the notion that, oh, person X likes unpopular thing Y, so we can just disregard them. But I do think we can disregard Hideo Kojima and Quentin Tarantino now, knowing that they like Joker Folie à Deux.
Have you even seen Joker Folie à Deux?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Although we're getting off track here, but I was on Amazon last night, actually, because it's a bit more movie news. 28 Days Later has come back to digital.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And last night I did watch it. I rented it through Amazon, and I saw Joker 2 was on there, and it had like 4.5 stars out of almost 200,000 reviews.
Wow.
So who knows what that's about.
A lot of Lady Gaga fans, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe.
Anyway, let's move on. That's our discussion for the DC, the upcoming DC Universe Take Two. We'll see how it goes. Anything's possible. But Elliot, why don't you introduce the audience to the movie that we're reviewing today? It was your pick, so let them know what's up.
All right, audience, meet Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead, meet audience. This is a 2004 zombie comedy movie directed by Edgar Wright. I believe this is our first Edgar Wright movie.
Yes.
Yes. Edgar Wright, of course, is a very popular, very successful director with a very distinctive style that he brings to all of his movies, or at least all of the movies of his that I've seen. This was released, in 2004. Kind of at the crest, I think, of the, or maybe a little bit before the crest of the zombie genre's popularity, because this was a bit before The Walking Dead, which really took it off. But it follows a young layabout named Sean. I can't remember what his last name is, but he's kind of adrift in life, not any real prospects. He doesn't have much ambition. He's just living with his college friends in a apartment in England. He spends every night at a pub called the Winchester. He hangs out with his girlfriend and his best friend, Ed, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Who is a slob and an even bigger layabout than Sean. And then into all of this comes a zombie event where, I know, it's scary, man. Corpses start walking around, start eating people, start biting people, spreading it around, and Sean and his retinue decide to try and wait it out at their pub, the Winchester, and so the movie's kind of about them trying to survive and trying to figure things out, and maybe along the way learn a few life lessons.
So true, so true.
This movie did pretty well for itself. It got strong reviews. It made a good chunk of cash. It helped the career of Edgar Wright and a lot of the people involved, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. And yeah, it's just it's a well-regarded movie. Wikipedia described it as a cult classic. I'm not sure I would describe it as having a cult following. It seems more just normally popular.
Yeah, I would agree with that characterization.
And we're talking about it. We're talking about it right now. I will give you my history with this movie, since I'm just going to keep on talking.
Great.
I watched this movie for the first time a while ago. I can't actually remember when or why, but I watched it a while ago and did not like it. I thought that it was tonally disjointed, not very funny, was not a big fan. And basically the reason I chose it is because I wanted to revisit it. By happenstance, seen a lot of, like, retrospective think pieces about the movie, and I was thinking, oh, well, I've seen a few more Edgar Wright movies and enjoyed them. Maybe I'll go back, give it a watch, and rope Nathan into this project and see what he thinks. So, Nathan, why don't you tell us what you think?
Well, first, I do have to say, my history with this movie, also, this is the first in the unofficial Cornetto trilogy, which is the trilogy of movies that kicked off Edgar Wright's career, all of which follow Simon Pegg and Nick Frost as kind of layabouts to varying degrees dealing with ridiculous sort of things. My history with this movie, the first and only time besides this most recent time that I had seen this movie was on a portable DVD player in a cabin at, I can't remember the name of the summer camp that our church would go to for the middle school.
Hidden Acres?
No, for the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Silver Birch.
Yeah.
Over the course of 2 nights, me and the other high schooler / college student who was a leader for the cabin watched Shaun of the Dead. That would be Ben Neeson, who has appeared on this podcast, friend of the program. Yeah, friend of the podcast, Ben Neeson. So that was the only time I had seen this movie, and I remember enjoying it. I remember Ben being a big fan of Edgar Wright and of this movie in particular. I think I was kind of in a similar boat to you, Elliot, that I think it's kind of tonally disjointed, and I didn't love it as much as I like Scott Pilgrim versus the World or even Hot Fuzz in some ways. So I was kind of also, I was glad you picked this movie, because I always like to go back and revisit this movies, and I still think some of those things that I said earlier, but I think I enjoyed this movie much more this time than I did the first time. I think I found it funnier. I found the editing to be more exciting and engaging, and I thought it was not the best example of Edgar Wright's kind of fun, foreshadowy, tightly plotted films that he's made. I thought it was a really good example of it. So I'm interested. Elliot, did you like it more this time than you did the first time?
No, I did not enjoy it more this time around. I may have enjoyed it like 5% more this time around, but I stand by my original characterization of this movie. I found its tone shifts to be whiplash-inducing. I found the humor to very rarely land, and often to go all in on jokes that were not funny in the first place. And I mean, there's very few things as unfunny as a joke that already does not land with you being protracted because it's just painful. And that happened more than a few times here. And just in general, I found the plot to be very sloppy and occasionally distracting in the way that it contorted events to make things happen. I found that really irritating, and I was very not engaged with the characters or anything that was happening. I think this movie is quite, quite poor.
Wow, that's harsh. That is very harsh. Dang. Well, I think I want to start, I suppose. I want to start on maybe the humor of the movie. You mentioned earlier in your description that this is...
Like 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, that this is a zombie comedy. And I think I would agree. The first time I saw this, I didn't find it particularly funny. And I still don't think the movie is... like laugh out loud hilarious. It's not as funny as something like Napoleon Dynamite, which I find to be very consistently funny. But I do think I found it to be funnier this watch, and especially with how dry so many of the jokes are. I think maybe my favorite joke was when they're trying to get to the Winchester and Simon and Sean goes like, oh, we'll just go over this fence or whatever. And David's like, we can't go over, you know, the fence. And Sean goes, what, you never taken a shortcut before? And then, like, breaks the fence or something. For whatever reason, I found that really funny. Especially Simon Pegg's delivery of, like, you've never taken a shortcut before. And so I think, in general, I found the movie to be much funnier just in terms of how dryly funny so many of the moments were, that it wasn't something that was super overt about the joke, but there was just something about the simultaneously serious and ridiculous way the characters were engaging with the situation in which they were put in. Like, clearly the zombies in this movie are not much of a threat. They are so slow. They suck. A lot of them are defeated by just like people throwing junk at them and not any genuine, like having to shoot them in the head or something. Speaking of shooting them in the head, I did also find it funny how abysmal Sean was at shooting the Winchester at the end of the movie. That typically when someone gets a gun, it would be like a cool, like, finally we're fighting back sort of moment. Sean, I think, hits the bar more often than he hits a zombie in this film. And I also found it kind of funny when they get to the basement and Liz asks, like, how many bullets do we have? Like, how many can we kill? And he's like, well, we've got two, so if they line up really nicely, like, we could get a couple. Again, it was something about the dry nature of the way they were interacting with their situation I found funnier than I did the last time. So I didn't find it hilarious, but I did think it was funny at the very least.
Well, I didn't really find it that funny, as I've already said. And that's actually kind of surprising because I do typically really like dry humor. And it's interesting because the next movie in this pseudo-trilogy, Hot Fuzz, I really like and think is very, very funny. But this, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't do it for me. And, like, him not being a very good marksman, why is that funny? That's just I would expect that. Like, he's a layabout who's never fired a gun in his life. Why should he be able to get headshots consistently? Especially since, like, the joke is he's just not good at shooting. And I don't find that very funny. That's not really a joke. It's just like a fact. That's like something you would put on a dating profile if you were a very poor dating profile writer. And yeah, just there were times where this movie thought, apparently the writers thought that they really had something. And so the prime example for this is they come to a point where they need to get through a large number of zombies in order to get to the Winchester, and they decide, as happens often in zombie fiction, they have an idea to act like zombies. And so what happens next is this like 3 or 4 minute long scene of one of Liz, Sean's girlfriend or ex-girlfriend at this point, one of Liz's friends trying to teach them how to act like zombies. And my goodness, I think I said out loud at one point, oh man, this is lasting a really long time, because it does last so long and it's not funny. They're just doing zombie impressions. And some of them are a little bad, yes, but it's just not funny. And it lasts for so long that by the end, I was honestly considering maybe I should just fast forward this, because nothing is happening here and I'm not going to miss anything and I'm just getting really irritated.
Wow. It is not that long of a sequence. And I think this is another classic, you know, Elliot, you're a little TikTok brained, you know, you need action, you need engagement. That's a joke. You're the least TikTok brained person I know. But I am really surprised that you found that scene to be that egregiously long, because I think calling it 3 or 4 minutes is generous. It's maybe a minute and a half, if that. It is so short. And this is, I'm not going to defend it and say, no, it's hilarious, Elliot, you should have been laughing. I don't think it's hilarious. I do think it's mildly amusing, again, how little effort so many of them seem to be putting into doing a good zombie impression, which you would think they would have a lot of like cause to do this, but David like is putting zero effort into trying to be a good realistic zombie, which again I find mildly amusing, because I find the fact that the characters don't seem to really be taking this zombie apocalypse very seriously, I find that to be kind of funny, as well as kind of deserved, again, given how incompetent and useless so many of these like the zombies can't get anything done. These zombies suck. They're terrible zombies.
It's interesting. I guess it just felt that long for me. I don't know what to say there. It's just something that, for whatever reason, just like really activated the irritation portion of my brain. Although you've just hit there on one of my biggest problems with this movie, is that I do not know how seriously I'm supposed to be taking this. Because the characters are not taking it seriously, like you said. And that wouldn't be a problem if A, there weren't any moments where they're taking it seriously, but there absolutely are.
Yeah.
Or B, it was something that clearly you don't need to take seriously. But it is at points. That there are points where the zombies are a real threat and terrible, brutal, violent things happen. And so that creates a real disconnect between the characters and the plot, and a further sense of disjointedness when those things do align. Because right now, if you imagine the seriousness of the situation and the seriousness of the characters as two separate lines, they usually are proceeding like parallel to each other, and then sometimes they're just random moments where they will jackknife towards each other, intersect for a little bit, and then depart to be, again, very separate. And that was really irritating to me, because I was thinking, like, the whole thing about this movie, that they're trying to get to a pub, they're going to go to a pub and try to survive a zombie apocalypse. And I was like, that is such a stupid idea. And it is a stupid idea. And the movie knows that it's a stupid idea. But why do the characters not realize that it's a stupid idea? Like, why are they going along with this? There are times where they're trying to explain why they're going to the Winchester. Like, Ed wants to be able to smoke. And that's clearly just a joke. But more seriously, Sean thinks that it should be someplace defensible and someplace familiar. And I was thinking, there are so many better options for that than just a pub, just a bar. And so that, to me, was just always taking me out of the movie, just constantly being reminded that these characters should realize that this is a terrible, terrible idea, and it's going to get people killed, and it does. And that is just such a... That is so... frustrating. That was so frustrating to me that I kept on thinking, like, why are they doing this? Why is no one saying this is such a stupid idea? And it would have been so much better if the movie had just never addressed it. If they had never tried to convince us that this was something that real people would actually try to do. And maybe they would. Maybe there are people out there who are so stupid that they would think, oh, I'll just go to the bar. But the movie does frequently try to convince us that this, or try to convince us by way of its characters, that this is a good idea. This is somehow a feasible, logical idea, but it's just patently not. And so that's, I think, a really lethal example of refrigerator logic not working for this movie. That right there in the moment, I was like, this is a stupid idea. There is no reason this should be happening. And so, like, there was, it just became so much harder to engage with the movie when there was constantly just this flashing sign right in front of my eyes. This is dumb. This is a bad idea.
This is what I love about the podcast, and this is what I love in general about reviewing movies with people and talking about movies with people, because they will get hung up on the most bizarre things in my mind that I'm like, that is such a crazy... Because I have never seen anyone complain about them going to the Winchester as much as you just did.
But that's not ancillary to the movie. That is the plot.
I know, but it just, it feels like one of those things where it's, at least for me, I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, is the Winchester the best place to go? Probably not. Is that the place the characters have decided to go? Yeah, I guess. And so, we mentioned in the last episode that I'm probably the most generous and forgiving reviewer in the universe. And I am, because I agree with you on some of these points, and we'll talk about, or at least I'll talk about my issues with the movie's tone in a bit. I don't have any issue with the believability of the movie or the believability of the characters' actions in the movie, because, like, it's a zombie movie and it's a zombie comedy movie. Like, it's supposed to be kind of silly, and I agree it's a little unbelievable that, like, Liz never says, hey, can we go to some place better than the Winchester, especially when it seems like they've been going to a couple of places that have, like, roofs that I feel like would be a pretty solid sort of place to hide out. But I don't know. I never once got that hung up on the Winchester. And like you said, it's a perfect example of the things that you realize in a movie that then ruin your enjoyment of the movie. And, it's, you know, I believe very strongly that's the movie's fault. So yeah, if the movie didn't keep you engaged enough to, which clearly it didn't, if you were feeling like that one scene was twice its length, then yeah, I would imagine that would be frustrating for you. But yeah, I have no issue with them going to the Winchester. It does provide another one of, I think, the best jokes in the movie when he's doing the little montage of how they're gonna do it, and he's like, we'll go to Winchester, grab a pint, wait for this to blow over, like, it'll all be peachy keen. So yeah, anyway, I don't want to keep talking about the Winchester, so to move on to your other point about the tone of the movie,
wait, because there's that, that's indicative of a different, of another problem of the way that the movie, that I just want to, you know, dang it.
Gosh, dang Elliot. It.
I know. I'm terrible.
I know. I know you know.
Now you can disregard everything I say. Yeah. Just what I said earlier about the ways that the script contorts itself in order to make things happen. I think that the going to the Winchester is an example of that. That the script is bending over backwards to try to make this happen because the writers and the filmmakers have decided that that's what they're going to do. They've started with a conclusion and worked backwards, which I think is A, not a great idea, and B, creates this problem of you can just feel the moments where the script is bending and contorting and warping itself in order to force things to happen. And there are more examples of that. One of them is, at one point, Sean's mother stops when they're walking through some backyards trying to get to the pub, and Sean's mother just stops and stares at a zombie in who's like pressing itself against a glass window, a glass door. And so already I'm like, okay, that's ridiculous. Like, no one would stop in this moment. No one would notice that someone had stopped. No one would not notice that their mother had stopped following them, at least not for as long as it takes. And then, for reasons that are truly beyond my pitiful human comprehension, somehow the zombie gets out. And this was another example of where I was just baffled, because it does not look like, in shots, it's never addressed, and the movie never stops and says, this is how the zombie gets out. But in shots, you can see the screen glass door, and it appears to be open. And so I was like, did the zombie open it, or did the mother open it? Because either of those are terrible. I mean, obviously, the zombie opening it is much better than if the mother had opened it. But yeah, clearly, the glass was not broken, is what I'm saying. So someone had opened it. And I was like, who and why? Because the zombies are not shown as having that kind of dexterity of being able to pick stuff up or move stuff around. So increasingly, I was like, the mother must have opened the door. But why? There's a little thing where she says, I think this is someone's house, someone that I know. And I was like, okay, are we saying that she opened the door because she knew this person and thought maybe he wasn't a zombie? And the reason this has to happen is because the filmmakers have decided that Sean's mother will become infected. So their plan for this to happen is to have this insane encounter with a zombie that only works, well, that doesn't work, but only kind of works if the zombies display a level of task awareness that they do not throughout the rest of the movie. That's the best case scenario for this moment. And so, yeah, I was just like, that is bad, man. Like, you cannot be doing that to make this happen in such a ridiculous way, especially since there are so many, like, it could happen in so many different ways. Just when they're just fighting zombies, a zombie could get her, because that makes sense. So why did it have to be this? And the other example, and I promise I'll finish up after this, is when they get to the pub and they can't get in, and so they've walked through the zombies by pretending to be zombies, and so now they're at the door and they're trying to get in, they can't get in, and then Ed takes a phone call. And I was like, that is Homer Simpson season 10 level stupid. Like, no, that is stupid. Without being funny, that is, like, I hate Homer Simpson season 10 and how stupid he is. And then, so, like, yes, that is stupid. And that is another example of the script breaking itself in order to get the zombies to notice that they're there and create some tension. And then Sean leads them off. And then he comes back and he says, I gave them the slip. And I was like, what? How? And then they don't answer. And then the zombies come back. And Liz is like, I thought you said you gave them the slip. And Sean says, I don't know if he says something or not, but clearly the implication is that he didn't give them the slip. And again, I was like, what? How? How did he not notice that they were still on to him? How did they track him down if he did give them the slip? And so, again, we see the script just finding these ridiculous paper-thin excuses to make things happen rather than organically integrating them into the actual procession of plot events. And yeah, it was very frustrating.
Wow. Well, I didn't know that we were going to be joined by Cinema Sins today, nitpicking
but
every
see,
tiny...
the thing is, like...
I knew that would get you.
The thing is, like, that's not nitpicky. Oh my gosh, you did get me. That's not nitpicky. Because those events are crucial to the plot. So they're not secondary concerns. Those are primary concerns. Those are things that have to do with immediate, high-level plot construction.
Oh, gosh, that's funny.
It's not funny. Take me seriously.
I don't know. I guess it's hard for me to take your complaint seriously because I don't think I'm taking the movie seriously enough to have these sorts of complaints. Like, certainly I see that you're right in the sense that, yes, Barbara getting bit is a fairly contrived sort of circumstance. And yes, Ed taking a phone call in that moment is kind of unbelievable and unbelievably stupid, even for a character who's been shown to be very... stupid in the film. I guess in general, the tone of the movie, and this is to get to my point so I can have some airtime here in this episode. I think the tone of the movie in general is too silly for me to think that much about a lot of these moments. That I'm never an advocate for like, oh, just shut your movie off or shut your brain off when you're watching a movie. For sure you shouldn't do that. If the movie is not engaging you in any way, then the movie is pointless and the movie is failing in every possible metric by which art can be measured. So I'm not saying like, Elliot, just, you know, stop thinking about it. Don't be like that. Because I am thinking about those things, but I guess the tone of the movie being as silly as it is and being as clearly ridiculous. I mean, the ending, I think, is a perfect example that at the end, Ed gets bit and turned into a zombie. And then at the very end of the movie, it's shown that Sean is like keeping him chained up in the shed to play video games with him. And Ed is displaying some amount of like cognitive ability to go along with that plan. And that's clearly a silly, ridiculous sort of ending. So I'm willing to, based on how serious the movie is taking itself, to kind of meet the movie on that level of seriousness. That because the movie is not trying to be like the Batman or, well, actually, I think even The Dark Knight is a really good example that even though The Dark Knight is taking itself very seriously in the sense that it's trying to be very realistic and gritty, the storyline is comic booky enough that a lot of the classic plot holes that people point out about it aren't really an issue in my mind, because I'm like, yeah, those are classic comic book plot holes. Like, that's a classically ridiculous sort of thing that, you know, people would do or people would not do. And so I feel kind of the same way about Shaun of the Dead, that it's a comedy, it's not taking itself very seriously, it's contriving things to try and make a joke, and I'm not gonna dock the movie for trying to be what it is. That I don't know. Instead, I'm gonna dock the movie for trying to be what it isn't, which is, in my opinion, the scenes like when Barbara reveals that she's been bit and Simon Pegg has a full-on like firstly, I have to say, I thought he did an incredible job. Like, he is acting so, so well. He seems genuinely distraught at the idea of his mother dying. So it's not a knock against his acting, but the movie is trying to do something that up to this point it has not tried to do, which is take itself as seriously as humanly possible. That suddenly Simon Pegg is having a full-on breakdown, a full-on, like, snot coming out of his nose, bawling breakdown at the idea of his mother dying, and that is not at all in keeping with the tone of any other scene in this movie. Nothing else is met with that amount of seriousness and drama. And so for the movie to try and pull this kind of ridiculous tonal switch, I think, is my biggest issue with the movie. And certainly there are other issues that I would agree with you. The movie's a little contrived. It does feel like it kind of suffers from, I think it has the opposite of what you think. I don't think it's they started writing with the end in mind. It feels kind of to me like they started writing with no end in mind and then got everyone stuck in the Winchester and just had to, you know, ex machina some soldiers to show up in order to, you know, have an ending that's not everyone getting eaten by zombies. But I think the tonal whiplash of the movie of trying to be a little more serious, because it does treat some things beyond just Barbara's death as, you know, a legitimate serious concern for the characters. I think doing that is kind of a failure of the movie, in my opinion.
Well, I agree, obviously. And I was actually, this is one of the things that I was thinking about the most when I was watching the movie and in the time afterwards, where I was thinking about, we've actually done a few movies like, for example, Banshees of Inisherin or Sideways that try to navigate this balancing act of providing comedy and pathos, not necessarily in equal measure, but trying to do both. And I think that the problem may be that in the best example that I can think of, or from these options, which would be Banshees, that the humor and the pathos are interwoven. Like, there are jokes and well-calibrated jokes in moments of seriousness that, rather than distract from the moments of seriousness, enhance it by, like, giving the audience a little bit of a valve for all of the pressure and the tension. It's something we talked about when we reviewed Banshees.
Yeah.
And I think that Shaun of the Dead's problem is that these different tones are just kind of self-contained and placed right next to each other. There's no attempt to bridge the gap between the comedy of trying and failing to kill a zombie by throwing household items at it and the legitimate horror of having your mother die in your arms and then needing to shoot her reanimated corpse in the head. And so these things just do not jive with each other because they are so separate. They just feel like, it feels a bit like the easiest one of these things does not belong picture puzzles in the world. Like, everything else in the picture is, I don't know, a farm. And then Godzilla is just standing right in the middle of the picture. And you're like, oh, it's that. That's the thing that doesn't belong. That these things are so different from each other. And they provide such a stark and very much unneeded contrast that you're just like, that again, it's, yeah, it's just whiplash. Where you're like, holy cow, man, this is actually horrific. And David's death is quite horrific.
Yeah, David. David gets it tough.
He gets it so tough, man. I know you haven't seen Day of the Dead, but it's very similar to a death that happens in there. And Day of the Dead is a very serious movie that's trying to take itself very seriously. And there's a chance that this is an homage. Like, this movie is full of jokes and references to George Romero's Dead trilogy.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an homage. If it is, I would still say this is the wrong time to deploy that homage because it is so horrific and so brutal that I was just like, oh man, how can I laugh at anything now? That's just terrible. I do want to talk, if you're okay with it, about characters now.
Oh, sure.
Because I think that these characters are not great. Especially...
That's shocking.
I know. Especially Ed, who's... The movie tries to... Well, throughout the movie, people are talking to Sean and saying, Ed is just a lodestone around your neck. He's the reason why you're such a loser. They say it sometimes in more generous terms than that, but the message is he's the reason why you're such a loser and you have no prospects is because you're kind of keeping this unambitious, lazy, definitely a loser around. And Sean is always sticking up for him. And it seems like maybe the movie wants to create a kind of arc there for both of them, for Sean to realize that he is going nowhere and he needs to take charge in his life and needs to be more ambitious and needs to start doing things. And also for Ed to, like, I don't know, start giving half of a fart about things that happened in his life. But the implementation, I think, is, again, very poor because there are just, honestly, it's not dissimilar to the problems with the tone in that there are these two starkly different tonal concerns just being shoved together. Because what will happen is that Sean will occasionally get mad at Ed and yell at him and insult him. And then in the very next scene, there will be no consequences for that. Like, the prime example of this is when Ed does his Homer Simpson thing and takes a call in the middle of this high-stakes situation. Sean knocks it out of his hand and then just lets him have it. He's like, you're an idiot. I'm always sticking up for you, but you're messing things up for me. He's saying this in R-rated language, by the way. You're messing things up for me, and I'm not going to let you mess things up again. And I was like, whoa, that's really something. Like, that seems like it should be a huge development in this kind of arc that they're establishing. But in the very next scene, there's no problem. They're joking around with each other. They're having fun. They make a joke about Dave is like, oh, Ed is your boyfriend. And Sean is like, he's not my boyfriend. And then Ed gives him a drink, and Sean is like, thanks, babe. And everyone laughs, or everyone except me laughs.
I laughed.
Well, great, Nathan. I hope you're happy.
I was. It was a funny joke.
And so, like, that... And then it just kind of ends. That they're together, everyone else is dead, it's Sean, Liz, and Ed, and they're in the basement, and Sean is just like, sorry I yelled at you. And Ed is like, oh, I'm sorry I was making mistakes. And I was like, that's it? That's it! Like, they've just decided that Ed has changed somehow, or like Sean has changed somehow. And when there's no reason for us to believe that. So I was like, ah, that's just like the cherry on top of the terrible sundae. That I was like, that's just so lame that they're just like, I'm sorry too. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I'm not gonna spend any amount of time defending this. I agree. I think this is another example of, I think Shaun of the Dead is kind of a classic, like, first movie sort of movie where I can see how people would really be huge fans of it and people would, like, claim it as, oh, it's a masterpiece or it's so amazing. But in my opinion, that does involve ignoring fairly basic things like the stuff we talked about, or at least that I've talked about as a clear negative for me, like the tone and, like, this lack of any sort of emotional closure, which is kind of, again, negated by the or is created by the fact that the movie writes itself into a corner, that Ed at this point has been bitten and clearly is going to die, so there's no way for it to have a genuine moment of Ed changing, because Ed has run out of time to change. He is in fact about to perish, and so his relationship to Sean is kind of irrelevant now because he's going to be dead. It's not irrelevant, but in the sense of the movie, it doesn't really matter if Sean can't really make the decision like, oh, I'm going to stop being around Ed to pursue, like, changing my life. The decision's been made for him at this point in the film. And I think the other Cornetto trilogy movies do this balance much better. I think Edgar Wright gets better at this with each film. And then goes way backwards with The Last Night in Soho, because that's probably my least favorite of his movies. But otherwise, he goes forward and does great jobs. But yeah, I don't really have any other notes. I do think on a technical level, it is kind of crazy that Edgar Wright comes into the game with this level of mastery of like editing and stuff. There's so many fun visual tricks, like whip pans, and he does, I like the joke at the beginning where Liz and Sean are talking about their friends and the camera keeps like panning over to show that their friends are right there. I find that very funny. The editing in montage sequences, like suit up scenes or scenes where people are getting ready to do stuff, is so good. And this has remained consistent in every Edgar Wright movie, that the editing is just so much fun to watch and so exciting that, again, I can see how people would be big fans of this movie. I just don't see how you could call it, like, apparently, Elliot, you'll love this, Tarantino considers this one of the best movies made in the 2000s.
It's like he's demoted himself to making me dislike him.
That's funny. But anyway, those are kind of my final thoughts. Is just, I think on a technical level, I have no notes. This movie is very fun to watch visually.
Well, I did want to end with some positives here.
Oh, good.
So I agree. That is one of the things that I was going to call out. Edgar Wright. Edgar Wright's style is very effective, and it's very fun to watch. I liked the editing. I liked the camera work. I really liked the long, smooth one-ers following Sean to and from work, and especially the one where everything is happening, everything is going down, and Sean just isn't realizing it. That's one of the few moments where I didn't laugh, but I was like, oh, that's kind of clever. And it looks very nice. Yeah, performances, Sean Pegg, I agree. He is definitely doing, he's always answering the call. When it's time to be silly, when it's time to be serious, he is moving between those two modes and showing that he has the chops for both of them. And it's not his fault that that's just a strange thing to do, is to jackknife between those two modes. Same thing applies to all the cast. Nick Frost, I believe, is the name of Ed. He has understood the assignment. He is doing the whole stupid layabout thing. Bill Nighy makes a brief appearance in this movie, and it was actually the only moment of pathos where I wasn't moved, but I was like, I did nod in the direction of being moved when Bill Nighy, he plays Sean's stepfather, and they have a tense relationship, and they have a moment of reconciliation, which is 100% unearned. Absolutely no setup for this to be an actual payoff. Literally the only reason why it even works a little bit is because of Bill Nighy and Simon Pegg's performances, because other than that, yes, again, it is another example of the script just being quite, quite low quality. And actually, that's another example. I know I'm supposed to be doing positives, but that's another example of the script contorting itself, that Bill Nighy becomes a zombie, and that is the reason why they end up abandoning their car. And I was like, dude, are you serious? Just open the door and let him, like, flop his way out, kill him, and then get back in the car. Like, why is it a better idea to proceed on foot? Why is that safer than just, like, trying to get him out of the car? Ridiculous. But anyway, yeah. Edgar Wright, he's a talented director, man. I can understand why. I mean, people like this movie. I am in the minority here. Most people like this movie. But even if they didn't, I would still understand why he has the career that he has because there is a lot of demonstration of clear talent here on the directing side, on the technical side. I think we're just waiting for Edgar Wright to get his poop in a group in the writing scene, which I think he does, because I like Hot Fuzz so much more than this movie, and I think it's so much more funny and much more consistent plot-wise. So yeah, definitely not... It's not a total loss of 2 hours. There are things that you can occasionally like, or that I occasionally liked. So when I don't give it an F, that will be why. Because there are a few things that I was like, all right, that's not bad.
All right, well, let's go and give it that score then. I'm going to go first. I stand by everything I said, obviously. I think the movie is... I think it's fun. I found it funnier than I did the first time. I don't think it's hilarious, and I think there are some structural problems, some writing issues that keep it from really being fantastic. But if there was like a midnight showing of Shaun of the Dead and I knew I'd be able to go with a bunch of other people who were into the movie, I think that sounds like a ton of fun. I think this is a classic movie that, like, I don't know if I would ever choose to watch it again by myself, but for sure if I was in a big group, I think it's a very good group movie, especially if there's someone in there who's really nutty about it. So I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10 for that. That's where it sits for me.
Very nice. I would hate that so much. Not only because I don't like this movie, but also because I feel like everyone would just be getting rowdy. There'd be a lot of noise. People would not be being, they would not be exhibiting a great amount of decorum and etiquette. And I would just be like, oh my gosh, this is terrible.
Well, I think, you know, not to spend too much time discussing this, but I think Shaun of the Dead is a movie I would be fine watching in a more rowdy sort of environment. I don't think every movie is a movie where I'm like, yeah, if I watched this with a crowd that was really getting into it, that would be amazing. Like, I wouldn't want to see Schindler's List with a bunch of people who are going to be like yelling and, you know, saying quotes as the characters say it. I don't want to do that. But I think Shaun of the Dead is a classic example of a movie that would probably be improved by being watched in a rowdy sort of atmosphere.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been in a situation, film or otherwise, where I've thought to myself, you know what would make this better? A lot of other people being loud and being in my space. But that's just because of my personality.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, that's just you, dude.
Yeah, that's not because Nathan's like an idiot or anything. It's just because we're different people, as we've seen in this review. So yeah, I also stand by everything that I've said. Obviously, I'm not going to recant at the 11th hour. I don't think this movie is very good at all. I think it's very sloppy in a lot of areas. And not very funny. So I'm going to give this a D. It has been saved because of the performances and because of Edgar Wright's inherent talent as a director. But yeah, not very good. I'm sorry, Ben. I hope we can still be cordial with each other. And I'm sorry to anyone who likes this movie. I'm glad that people like it. Obviously, people only benefit when people are enjoying stuff. Unless they're enjoying stuff that's like immoral. But,
okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's get to recommendations here. This episode might be running a little long, so I'm going to go with, I think, a pretty obvious recommendation. It's the other very famous Zomcom from the 2000s. It's going to be Ruben Fleischer's Zombieland. I would say both of these movies, I feel almost identically about both of them. If you've only ever seen Shaun of the Dead and you've never seen Zombieland, you definitely should, because it has a lot of the same qualities as Shaun of the Dead. It is, I think it's probably funnier than Shaun of the Dead. It has one really, really fantastic joke that I think is much better than anything in Shaun of the Dead. But in general, it's a very talented cast. It's a very fun premise. I think it does a better job than Shaun of the Dead at staying very tonally consistent and focusing on just being funny and taking the situation that the characters are in a little less seriously than other zombie properties. So I think if you've never seen Zombieland, you should definitely watch it. And then don't watch the sequel, because the sequel is just no good at all. The sequel is doing what Shaun of the Dead does, and it's doing it even more so and to an even worse extent.
Okay, then. I have not seen that movie. I am planning on seeing it, actually, once I'm back at home for break. It's one of the movies. I've got a list of movies that I want to watch, and that's actually on there. So I can't speak to that recommendation. My recommendation, if you like your horror comedies, if you liked Shaun of the Dead for the awareness and spoof nature of the movie, if you liked its awareness of zombies as a genre, which is not something we talked about a lot, mostly because I am the only person who would understand them and Nathan would have nothing to say. But it is there. And if you liked that, and if you liked if the moments of heart landed with you, then my recommendation is going to be Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Now, this is a movie. I know. I was right there with you, Nathan, when I heard about this movie. And I had no expectations for it. But when I watched it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very funny. It's a spoof of the slasher genre, which is another horror subgenre that I'm actually a little bit familiar with. So Shaun of the Dead is zombies. This is more about slashers. It's got Alan Tudyk in it. Can't go wrong with Alan Tudyk. He's really funny, and he's really funny in this movie. So it follows a pair of hillbillies who are mistaken to be murderers by a group of silly college students, the classic slasher cast of young, attractive people. Mm. And then the young, attractive people begin accidentally killing themselves in their attempts to defeat Tucker and Dale, who are just, of course, don't really understand what's going on and are just baffled by the whole thing. It's really funny, especially if you're into slashers, and or at least you have a knowledge of them and their tropes, so you have that understanding when the movie is making jokes about those. But also, it's just generally funny. Of course, Alan Tudyk, like I said, is a great pick, I think, here. And it does have a legitimate heart. It's not trying to be as serious as Shaun of the Dead is in its serious moments, but it is trying to have this legitimately moving story about a person sort of coming into their own, discovering self-confidence, the classic hero's journey in a lot of ways. So yeah, I really like it. I would give it a watch if you liked Shaun of the Dead, or if you didn't like Shaun of the Dead and wanted something closer to the promise of Shaun of the Dead, I would say this will probably do it for you. I would also say that Life is Hard and Full of Disappointments.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. I can't second that one. Haven't seen it. Although, honestly, I might watch it. That was a pretty... It is a movie I've seen a lot and always kind of wrote off as like, yeah, that sounds kind of dumb. That sounds kind of fun, actually. And knowing that you found it fun, maybe I would too. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Do you love Edgar Wright? Are you a huge Shaun of the Dead fan? Do you think we went way off in talking about it? Send us an email. Let us know. You can also send us an email if you have any requests or recommendations for a movie you want us to watch and talk about. We are going to be back next week with another brand new episode. That'll be after Christmas, so everyone have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays for whatever you're doing to celebrate here at the end of December. And we hope you join us next week for our next movie review.